السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، نحمده ونسبحه ونقدسه على آلائه ونعمائه، ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، إلها واحدا أحدا فردا صمدا حيا قيوما. نؤمن له بالربوبية ونقر له بالعبودية. من يهدي الله فهو المهتدي، ومن يضلل فلن تجد له وليا مرشدا. ونشهد أن سيدنا محمدا عبده ورسوله، أرسله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله. اللهم صل وسلم وزد وبارك وترحم على محمد وآل محمد، كما صليت وسلمت وباركت وترحمت على إبراهيم وآل إبراهيم في العالمين، إنك حميد مجيد. وصل اللهم وسلم على أوصيائه وخلفائه وعترته وأهل بيته والخيرة من صحابته. عباد الله، أوصيكم ونفسي بتقوى الله. قال الله في كتابه الحكيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: لقد نصركم الله في مواطن كثيرة ويوم حنين إذ أعجبتكم كثرتكم فلم تغن عنكم شيئا وضاقت عليكم الأرض بما رحبت ثم وليتم مدبرين. صدق الله العلي العظيم، وصلى على محمد وآل محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Chapter number 9 of the Quran, which is a chapter that primarily, from its beginning, focuses on the relationship between the Muslims in Medina and the community in Mecca and the surrounding areas of Mecca towards the end of the life of the Prophet, and specifically around the time of the conquest of Mecca, the Fath, when the Prophet was commanded by God to leave Medina and go back to Mecca for the purpose of conquest. And this was after the treaty, which was established a year prior between the Muslims and the non-Muslims, after that treaty was broken. And that treaty was known as Sulh al-Hudaybiyah, the Treaty of Hudaybiyah. And because from the side of the Meccan community that treaty was broken, the Prophet, by the command of God, mobilized the Muslims from Medina and came towards Mecca. Now what had happened was that Mecca, there were a number of tribes which lived just outside of Mecca, in areas like, for instance, one of them was the area of Ta'if. And the Prophet, when he was in Mecca, had visited the city of Ta'if in order to invite its people towards Islam. And of course he did not receive support. But there were two main tribes in that area. One tribe by the name of Hawazin, the other tribe by the name of Thaqif. And those who come from the tribe of Thaqif, there are important figures that come from that tribe. The name, when you hear the name Al-Thaqafi, Thaqafi means that they belong to the tribe of Thaqif. So, for instance, when you hear of Al-Hajjaj ibn Yusuf al-Thaqafi, for instance, or Abu Ubaidah al-Thaqafi, these were people who were from the tribe of Thaqif. So, what Hawazin and Thaqif had done when the Prophet was coming to Mecca was that they began to mobilize their own numbers. Because some of them believed that the Prophet was not actually going to Mecca, but he was coming to Ta'if in order to conquer. So they started mobilizing their own groups of people. And by this time, when the Prophet went back to Mecca, they were somewhere, narrators say, between 12 and 16,000 strong. Which is a sharp contrast from the first battle that the Muslims fought when they were in Medina, the Battle of Badr, when they were only around 313. So there was a major increase in their numbers only within a few years. Now on top of that, what had happened was that the Prophet went to Mecca, he conquered Mecca, And then there were a group of people who remained in Mecca. Some of them accepted Islam, some of them were reluctant to accept Islam, and some of them did not even accept Islam. So some of them did so willingly, some of them not so willingly, and some of them did not even accept Islam. However, what happened, when the Muslims arrived to Mecca, Hawazin and Thaqif, because they had already mobilized their people and they thought they were going to be next, they attacked the Muslims. So this battle took place. And this battle, in which the Muslims were defending themselves after Fatih Mecca, was known as Hunayn. And it's one of the battles that's mentioned by name in the Quran. So Badr is mentioned by name in the Quran. Hunayn is also mentioned by name in the Quran. And where they are mentioned is in chapter 9, Surah At-Tawbah, verse 25. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, لَقَدْ نَصَرَكُمُ اللَّهُ فِي مَوَاطِنَ كَثِيرًا. That God had granted you a number of victories in a number of places. This is what he's saying to the Muslims. In this context, in this verse, he says, وَيَوْمَ حُنَيْن. So, Hunayn was that specific battle that took place, and it was named after the valley in which it took place. Because between Mecca, for those of you who have visited the city of Mecca, between Mecca and other cities, there are a number of valleys. And it's not easy terrain to travel in. But in this specific instance, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says the following. He says, إِذْ أَعْجَبَتْكُمْ كَثْرَتُكُمْ. He says, on that day when we granted you victory, the mistake that you had, and then the verse which comes after speaks about how God granted success. But he talks first about the mistake, that you almost lost the battle because you were impressed by your numbers. إِذْ أَعْجَبَتْكُمْ كَثْرَتُكُمْ. You thought that because you had numbers on your side, that you were going to win, that you were going to be victorious. That because you had gone from 313 to a few thousand, and then eventually you reached the number 12,000, or 16,000, however many, you thought that that was, because you had numbers on your side, you were going to be victorious. And you were impressed with yourselves. In أعجبتكم كثرتكم. أعجبت, coming from عجبة, which means to admire, or to be impressed with something. And the way that it's, see, admiration in itself is not something harmful. It's not negative. However, there is something which is pointed out in the narrations of the Ahlul Bayt which does have a negative connotation, and that is self-admiration, when you admire yourself. And this is exactly what the Quran is speaking about here. إِذْ أَعْجَبَتْكُمْ كَثْرَتُكُمْ. When you fall into the habit of thinking, I've done this much, and I'm impressed with myself, and I admire myself. And so, basically what had happened was that the Muslims almost had lost this battle, because it was in rough terrain, it was rugged terrain. They thought because they had numbers, now Hawazin and Thaqif had actually prepared more numbers than that. They had about 20,000 people on their side. So, in terms of numbers, they had more on the other side, but the Muslims at that time, their morale was up. Why? Because they had just conquered Mecca. They had just come back, and some of them, after years of being exiled from the city that they were born in and raised in, they come back and they conquer it. So they're going off of this excitement that we can conquer, we have these numbers, but they had, according to narrations, lost sight through that process of what their goal really was, of what was really important. And a lot of them, sort of, if you read the narrations, they were triggered by the spoils of war that they were about to receive. So their focus was not about doing the right thing, was not about defending themselves, was not about standing by their prophet and standing by their leader and rallying around one another, but their sight, as had happened in earlier battles, had shifted from that towards receiving the reward, towards receiving the spoils. But then of course Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that we saved you from that battle. We saved you from destruction in that battle. Now, what happened was very interesting. At that time, because there were people who were new to Islam, remember, this is happening right after the conquest of Mecca. So the people who had waited that long to accept Islam, their faith was not as solid as the people who joined the Prophet years earlier, who left their home, who left their business, who left their livelihood, who left everything that they had behind in Mecca in order to join the Prophet. You can clearly see that there is a difference in the level of attachment and the level of dedication that they had to the Prophet. So another verse is revealed at this time, and it refers to those who were to receive the spoils of war from the battle as al-mu'allafati qulubuhum, that those who their hearts change, those who their hearts are susceptible to change. And what happens is interesting. After this battle, and of course, the Prophet, everything that he does is by the command of God. Everything that he says, we believe, is by the command of God. If he is to distribute something, how he distributes that, the share that he distributes to each person or each group, is not by his own whim, it's not by his own desire. You know, last week we spoke a little bit about Fadak, and when he gifted Fatimah Zahra alayhi salam with the land of Fadak, he didn't do that because of his own whim or because of his own desire, but rather because the verse that was revealed during that time said, وَآتِ ذَا الْقُرْبَ حَقَّ, give the closest of kin what they are due. So, again, the Prophet finds himself in the situation where he is distributing, but what does he do? He takes not some of the spoils of war, but he takes all of the spoils of war and he gives it towards the new Muslims, the ones that had just joined the ranks, not the ones that sacrificed and left many years before, the ones that came from Medina, but he gives it all to the new ones, the new people that came. So if you read the narrations, the amount that he had given to people like Abu Sufyan, for instance, and those who accompanied Abu Sufyan, it's sheer numbers that he had given them. This is what's interesting. What takes place right after is a conversation between the Prophet and between some of his closest companions. And they come to him, some of them, they said, Ya Rasulallah, we put our lives in danger for this task of conquering Mecca and then defending ourselves from these two great tribes. And we've left our families behind, we've left our lives behind, we've risked everything that we have, and now we're receiving nothing. And these people who are new, who fought against you for many years, who had their swords turned against you, they're receiving this portion. And a very intimate conversation takes place between the Prophet and his companions. And so the Prophet tells them, and of course, like we said, the Prophet is directed by God. So the Prophet tells them, he says that you're right. And the people of Medina, the people who came with me, you have many favors upon me. He says that when I came to Medina, I had no protectors. I came leaving from assassination attempts. He said, when I came, I had nothing with me. I had no home. Remember when the Prophet arrived to Medina, he had no mosque, he had no home. All of that had to be constructed from new. The Prophet essentially went with nothing, almost nothing. He said, but you sheltered me when I didn't have shelter. And you believed in me when people were not believing in me. And you supported me when people were not supporting me. And all of those rights you have upon me. So what was the Prophet doing? The Prophet was reminding them that our relationship goes much beyond just any material compensation that you can receive for standing by my side. There are some people who their level of conviction is not high enough. So what? We need to give them materials for them to be okay. We need to give them wealth for them to be okay. But for you, he says to his close companions, you don't need anything beyond that. You are beyond that level. And so some of them, they understand the point behind this. And narrations say that some of them begin to weep and they fall to the feet of the Prophet. But what happened was that, going back to this verse, they saw themselves as sheer numbers. So a lot of them fell into this mistake that we have a lot. And the Quran says, أَعْجَبَتْكُمْ أَنفُسُكُمْ, you admired your numbers, you were impressed by your numbers. And this is something that's pointed out in the narrations of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. It's referred to as ujub. There's one narration that's narrated in Al-Kafi, and this is narrated on the authority of the seventh Imam, Al-Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam. He says the following. He says, when a person is afflicted with ujub, which is self-admiration, two things happen. Number one is that their bad actions, their evil actions, begin to appear as good. Once you begin to admire yourself, once you're impressed with yourself, everything that comes out of you which is evil, you begin to think as good. You begin to see as good. And that's why we always have to pray to God to allow us to see things as they truly are. That's one of the prayers, it's one of the supplications, is that, oh Allah, show me things as they truly are. Because it's one thing to, you know, they say when you're having conversation, it's not about what you say, it's about what the other person hears. It's about what the other person understands. And in the same way, that applies to actions. And that sometimes, the deed which is produced, it's important to see the reality of that action, the reality of that deed. And when God blesses somebody, God gives that person the ability to see things as they truly are. To see things as they clearly are, to see the reality behind things. You know, one narration, it says, I might have mentioned this last week, it says, Al-mu'min yanduru bi'aynillah. A believer begins to see with the eye of God. Not literally the eye of God, but it's the believer is given discernment, given the ability to discern between truth and falsehood, between right and wrong. And that's a blessing that God bestows upon people, upon the righteous people. And the opposite is also true, is that when people are engaged in evil, actively engaged in evil, their ability to see things clearly becomes clouded. And they're not able to make the proper judgments. They're not able to make the right decisions. So this is one thing he says. And another thing, when you're afflicted with being impressed with yourself, self-admiration, is that you believe, however, you believe that your belief, your iman, in that you are doing a favor upon God. So some people carry that around, that I'm doing a favor inside. They don't say it, but inside, they believe that they're doing God a favor. Or they're constantly doing other people a favor. When he says it's the exact opposite. When God is continuously granting you with favors. There's nothing that you can give God. There's no deposit that you can make in God's account where God will be independent of you. God always has been independent of you. God always has been independent of us. So, how do we tackle, just in a couple of very quick points, how do we tackle self-admiration? Well, number one, it's important to hold ourselves accountable so that we become aware of our shortcomings and our mistakes. See, because the narration says that if you're engaged in self-admiration, if you're always impressed by yourself, then you overlook your shortcomings. You overlook your weaknesses. And that was the case with the Muslims at that time, that they were impressed with their numbers, they were impressed with their prior victories, they were impressed with their we just conquered Mecca. Mecca that's never been conquered. Mecca that, you know, Surah Al-Fil, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that Abraha brought elephants and he brought armies in order to conquer the place. And he could not. Now of course the intentions are completely different. But the fact is that Mecca had never been conquered before. We know no history that says that Mecca before that time had been conquered by an army or anything like that. And now they took back their home, the place that they had been longing for. And on top of that, they were on the side of the Prophet. So they were really impressed with themselves. They were impressed with their victory. They began to admire themselves, so much so that they overlooked their weaknesses. They overlooked the fact that, well, maybe some people who have just joined our army right now, their intentions are not as pure as our intentions. And that's what almost had led to their failure. So, to recognize our own shortcomings, to understand our own shortcomings. And sometimes that's not clearly available. It's sometimes hard for us to really analyze and examine our own intentions and examine our own actions. That's why it's important that you stay accountable. Sometimes it's important to stay accountable to somebody else. Now that person may be a father or a brother, or it could be somebody outside. It could be a mentor, somebody who is looking out for you, somebody who doesn't necessarily have an emotional vested interest in you, so that they see your actions and they can evaluate your actions and they can tell you if you're headed in the right direction or the wrong direction. So associating with the right people and receiving guidance from the right people is key. That's number one. Number two, understand that anything that you do, you are merely a shadow. You are merely shadowing God's attributes. You know, in some mystical elements of Muslim thought, they refer to the human being versus God. They refer to the human being as a mirror. That you're simply a mirror of God's reflections. And you know, when you engage in prayer and when you engage in purification, what you're essentially doing is that you're polishing that mirror. You have some mirrors that are dirty and you can't really clearly see a reflection through them, and then some mirrors that are always kept clean and polished and you can get a better picture. Well, in that way, understand that you're only a mirror for God's attributes. So if you're impressed with your generosity, I was very, very, you know, you're looking at your tax statements. I was very, very generous last year. I donated a lot, you know, going over your receipts and whatnot. Well, understand that your generosity is only a reflection of God's generosity. I'm knowledgeable on this subject and that subject. Well, understand that all knowledge and final knowledge rests in the abode of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So anything that you have, so to put it very easily, you're not that special. If there's anything special about you, it comes from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So continuously understand that. Continuously understand that you are a vessel. You are simply a vessel for God's mercy. You are simply a vessel for God's love. You are simply a vessel for God's beauty. And that's why the narration says, تَخَلَّقُوا بِأَخْلَاقِ اللَّهِ, that assimilate yourselves with the attributes, or with the character of, with the attributes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And one final thing is to remember that, understand that with whatever you are doing, you can never repay Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for His bounties. You know, a beautiful way to understand this is if we reflect upon the supplications of the Imams of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. And these are, remember, people who are pure, who were free of error, who were truly polished mirrors reflecting the attributes of God. And if you reflect upon their supplications are not only eloquent in their expression, but what they express is that whatever I do, whatever I give, whatever I perform is never enough. How can I repay a God which is infinite? How can I repay a God which is unlimited if by nature I am finite? And if by nature, my human nature, I am limited? So understanding that and being humble all the time. I'll end with a hadith by our fifth Imam, Al-Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam. He says, the way to block ujub, which is self-admiration, is by recognizing yourself. Once you recognize yourself, meaning recognize your own value, but also recognize your position. Recognize that in front of the generosity of God, your generosity is insignificant. In front of the kindness of God and the beauty of God, your kindness and your beauty is insignificant. So really knowing once yourself, and another narration which states that he who knows himself has known his Lord. Man arafa nafsah, arafa rabbah. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to allow us to be cognizant of our shortcomings and our mistakes. And we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to grant us with humility and humbleness. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wal asr inna al-insana lafi khusr. إلا الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات وتواصوا بالحق وتواصوا بالصبر. وصلوا على محمد وآل محمد. نسبحه ونقدسه على آلائه ونعمائه، ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، ونشهد أن سيدنا محمدا عبده ورسوله أرسله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله. اللهم صل وسلم وزد وبارك وترحم على محمد وآل محمد، كما صليت وسلمت وباركت وترحمت على إبراهيم وآل إبراهيم في العالمين، إنك حميد مجيد. وصل اللهم وسلم على جميع أوصيائه وأهل بيته وعترته، علي أمير المؤمنين وقائد الغر المحجلين، وعلى البضعة الطاهرة فاطمة الزهراء سيدة نساء العالمين، وعلى صدق نبي الرحمة وسيد شباب أهل الجنة الحسن والحسين، وعلى علي بن الحسين ومحمد بن علي وجعفر بن محمد وموسى بن جعفر وعلي بن موسى ومحمد بن علي وعلي بن محمد والحسن بن علي والخلف الهادي المهدي، عجل الله تعالى فرجه وسهل مخرجه وجعلنا من أنصاره وأعوانه. عباد الله، أوصيكم ونفسي بتقوى الله عز وجل. I'd like to just take a couple of minutes to reflect on some of the events which have transpired in the past week, and especially in the past few days. And most of you are following the news and know what happened a couple of days ago in London, England. The attacks that took place. And first of all, as a community, on behalf of the community, I'd like to send our condolences and our thoughts and our prayers with the victims of this tragic attack. And we're living in a world where this is not new, and sometimes we get into the habit of saying, you know, well, it happens so much where we sort of become numb to it. And it sort of becomes like, this is something that's happening every other day, what next? And yes, it is something, unfortunately, that has happened more so over the past few years, but we should never let that, number one, we should never let that affect our sensitivity towards these attacks. I know for a fact that this has happened. You know, if you look at countries like Iraq and Syria in the past 10 years, and other countries as well, where you have attacks happening like this, sometimes on a daily basis, sometimes a weekly, sometimes a monthly basis, and sometimes people get oversensitized, like, okay, well, what's new? What's next? And we should never fall into that habit, because every attack on innocent life, no matter whether that innocent life is Muslim or non-Muslim, it does not matter. The Quran reminds us first and foremost that if a life is taken unjustly, it is as if the life of all of humanity is taken. And if you give life, it is as if you have given life to all of humanity. So we can never say that one life is more important than the other. And what is our stance? So sometimes, especially with the media today, it's very confusing. Like I said last week, there's always information and misinformation. And what is our role as Muslims? So number one, we send our condolences and our thoughts and prayers and understand that every attack on human life, innocent human life, is a tragic attack, whether it's Muslim or non-Muslim. But we need to also invest some time into understanding, well, what is the cause behind all of this? What is the ideology behind this? Is it that there is an actual ideology which is promoting this type of hatred and this type of violence and this type of extremism? Or is it hidden agendas which are trying to stir up sectarianism, are trying to stir up violence between people of different ethnicities and different faiths and different religions and different backgrounds? And they understand that by breeding fear, you can breed more hatred. And that's one of the biggest problems that we're dealing with today, is fear. Because fear is bred out of ignorance. Fear is what causes people to do extreme things. Fear is what causes extreme measures. And there are people there, there are certain agendas which their goal is to intentionally strike fear in our hearts so that they can weaken us. So our job as individuals is to stay strong-hearted. And the way that we do that is, first of all, by creating and strengthening bonds between ourselves as a community. And creating bonds and strengthening them with other communities as well. And last but not least, through our prayer. This is the time when the world needs our prayer the most. And this is why the day of Friday is a very blessed day. It's a day where we send out our prayers for all of those who are oppressed, for all of those who are struggling, for all of those who are victims of violence and oppression. And we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to remedy the hearts of those who are affected. Please join me and let us recite Dua al-Faraj, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma kulli waliyika al-Hujjat ibn al-Hasan, salawatuka alayhi wa ala abaih, fi hadhihi al-sa'a wa fi kulli sa'a, waliyan wa hafidha, wa qaidan wa nasira, wa dalilan wa ayna, hatta tuskinahu ardaka tawha, wa tumatta'ahu fiha tawila, برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين وصلى الله وسلم على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين.